Well, hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Good show for you today. We're going to handle an inbox question from a girl who sees a guy in passing, says hello, but wants to know if there's anything additional she can do to perhaps attract his attention and or interest. The guys at the table are grimacing. So we're going to go ahead and help her for our inbox segment. And then our culture segment today is an interview with Rebecca St. James. And you know that I blogged on the fact that she is now engaged back when it happened. And I was able to talk with her by phone and get the full scoop on that, as well as the info on her latest album. So make sure you check that out. But here we are for today's roundtable. We are going to talk about singleness in different stages of life, and you all know about this already because you submitted your questions to us, as we are going to address them on this week's show. And we got a ton of questions. Martha, craziness.
I was really impressed on
Facebook and the blog. Yeah. So you all spoke and we listened. We have them printed out here. We're going to try to tackle as many of them as we can. And so let's go ahead and jump right in. I want to just go around the table quickly and introduce our guests. Go ahead. In fact, I'll let you introduce yourselves. Just say your name and your age, and then we'll move along.
Hi, my name is Lee Mays. I'm 42 years old.
I'm Andrew Hess, and I am 30.
I'm Nathan Pyle, and I'm 28.
And I'm Martha Krinke, and I'm 28.
And I'm Lisa Anderson, and I am 39. Devastating. No, it's okay. I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic. Still in the 30s, hanging in there. So, okay. Well, good. So we obviously have different perspectives, different ages, different backgrounds, and I'm sure those will be reflected as we wander through these questions. And we're going to try to do them as rapid fire as possible so we can tackle many of them. And Martha graciously divided them into categories for us, which is great. So it seemed like there was a common theme that we're going to start with about dealing with singleness and being single as it relates to other people and other people's comments, other people's impressions, other people's gaffes as they try to talk to us about singleness. So the first question I want to throw out is obviously from one of our listeners, and it says, how do you deal with married people who just don't get it? And this is the people that give the platitudes. You know, as soon as you get things right with God, then I'm sure God's going to reward you with a husband or a wife. And they kind of imply that until we are strong enough Christians, we won't be rewarded with marriage. So who wants to jump in?
Well, I think that as I hear that, I weigh that against two things. One is they might be right. It's possible that, you know, as singles, that there are things in our lives that, you know, that we need to work on or that we need to work through. I would say it's probably not the majority of people. And so to kind of generalize that isn't fair. But so initially, I might actually assess myself and say, okay, the things in my life that yeah, I need to work on or I need to improve on. But secondly, I would say that, you know, if somebody says that to me, oh, well, you just need to get things square, get things right, and then God will reward you with marriage. I don't know if I think of marriage as a reward or as, I mean, I think it is definitely a blessing, but I don't know that it's something where God's like, okay, once you get to this level of spirituality, then I'm going to give it to you. You know, I mean, God has given marriage to a lot of people who are at all different places spiritually, and it has been a benefit and detriment to all kinds. So to say that marriage is kind of this reward is probably myopic. And so to that, I would probably, you know, I just kind of respond and say, you know, you need to be careful kind of saying that because you don't know. For some, singleness will be what God has for them. And so you're not behind if you're not married yet.
Yeah, there's definitely an element of not knowing the heart of the Father when you start to attribute singleness to punishment or marriage to blessing. Mm-hmm. That's just not who God is. That's not who He is. And I think the thing that's happening here is this person is not wanting to really truly engage who you are. It's real easy to say that and throw it back on you rather than walking with you in your life and hearing your heart and hearing what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I would also like to point out that I think most people say this with good intentions. They don't want you to feel bad, and so they, you know, they try to give some kind of reason for maybe why you're single, even if you don't want to be, or they want to issue some kind of hope to you. And so I think there are good intentions, but I often just kind of say, you know what? Messed up people get married all the time, and so I think that's a little bit of a smokescreen, a little bit crazy to just kind of throw that out there, and sometimes I use humor to do it, and I think it helps. So, all right, well, let's go ahead and address this next question. How do you express to others that you would like to be married and would appreciate their prayers in this area without coming across as desperate or not content in your current state?
When I heard this question, I automatically put it into the job context of if I was looking for a job, I would certainly go talk to the people that I know and just make those different connections. So I don't think that is showing that you're not content or that you're desperate. It's using your resources. And I've actually emailed a lot of friends before and say, who do you know in their upper 20s, early 30s, or whatever that you could set me up with? Or even some friends and I put together a prayer card of, is a picture of all of us, five single ladies, you know, waiting for God's timing. And we sent it out to some really good friends and they're praying for us. So I don't see any shame in doing that.
I think there's an element of not looking desperate. I think it's okay to desire it, but if it's something that you're holding out your happiness or your joy and you're portraying that to other people, then that's not attractive. It's like always swimming with someone who can't swim. You know, throw me a life preserver. You know, you're just like, okay, yeah, I get it. You can't swim, you know.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I think the just like Martha said, putting it out there is excellent and making that known, but constantly probably belaboring the point, whining about, right. You know, oh my goodness, and all the guys are just crazy and whatever. That's not going to help anyone. Okay, what is the proper perspective and loving response to parents who put increasing pressure on the fact that I'm getting older and not dating?
I've kind of there in one time in my life where parents were, they were looking to me to kind of carry on the last name of the family, you know. So I get this pressure from father, like, oh, you know, we'd really like to have children sometime this century. And it gets to the point where it's just aggravating after a while. And so the proper response I say to them is that I see myself in a different place right now. I want to make sure I can be able to provide. I want to make sure I'm growing as a leader, as a spiritual leader. So when I do meet that woman, I'll be able to lead us spiritually in the right way through our lives. And when I get married and have children, I'll be able to be mature enough to know when my children come to me with questions about spiritual questions that I've done the research. I've answered my own questions, and I'll be able to answer theirs. So I say I'm looking way down ahead to make sure I'm prepared before that woman even enters my life. And I think that's a big part of how I answer. And they seem to respond to that pretty well, and they seem to take that as a good answer.
What about, here we have one listener that said, when you are 33 plus years of age and want to marry and have biological kids, how do you respond to comments such as, oh, you have time, don't rush it, and if God wants you to have kids, you will have kids?
Those are certainly true statements, but it kind of misses you. You know, again, it's those kind of answers that just kind of put things off, rather than identifying with what you're actually feeling and needing, you know, they just push you away.
Okay, what about this person who says, reactions to my singleness that should be positive can cut to the heart even more than negative ones. I can dismiss the negative ones much more easily because the lie is obvious. If it's true that I'm such a great person, though, then why am I single?
I had a friend who got that a lot of, what? You're not married? That's unbelievable. And I always wished I got that comment more. I don't know. She was maybe just more outgoing that she got it, but so it's interesting that this person saw that as a negative.
Yeah, I mean, I think when people point it out, anytime they point out that you're single, and especially if you're around a bunch of people that are married, it can be a little bit of a, you can take it as a jab, even if they're positive. I remember one time I was at a birthday party and I had brought this cake, and like a bunch of the women there tasted it and they were like, how are you still single? and I mean, I kind of like just jokingly thought about it, but I mean, here like 5 years later, I still remember it. So, I can kind of resonate with that question. And I think, it is one of those things where in our culture, you know, there is that stigma and we feel it. And so we really have to kind of fight for, okay, I understand, you know, how I think about my life and where I am and where I'm headed. And to really think in terms of, you know, I don't want to perceive myself based on my, you know, singleness or things like that. And so we do have to fight to keep our minds, you know, on the way we really ought to be thinking and the trajectory of our lives, and that, you know, single or married, we're all striving to serve the Lord as well as possible, and that, you know, some of us will do that well as singles and some of us will do that better if we get married, but that the eye is on that. And if we keep our focus on that, a lot of times these comments don't hit us as hard because we recognize, okay, I'm actively pursuing the Lord and pursuing what He has in my life. And so the sting, at least for me, when I feel that, I start to think about, okay, what are the things that I'm doing in my life that are active, that I'm actively chasing what I see the Lord calling me to, and that tends to kind of refocus me. And so a lot of these comments we've been talking about, they kind of lose their sting a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I think also when it comes to social interaction, it's generally surface scratching. It's a lot of platitudes. So when someone says, oh, but you're a great guy, I don't know why you're single, they don't really know me. So they may have known me for 5 minutes or so and just said that. And I remember when I was younger, a girl told me that, and I asked her out, and she said, well, I don't want to go out with you. So it's like, I can't believe that nobody wants to date you. So, and then I say, why don't you date me? Well, I can't. So I kind of caught her. On that. And I thought that was funny later, but at the time it hurts because it's kind of a platitude to say that. And on the flip side, people that do know you're a great person, they are genuinely wondering why you may still be single, because they see what kind of character you have. And they ask those questions, but in the same way, they can't really answer it. So they're just trying to make you feel good. And it seems like a positive comment, but it might cut you a little deeper than you may realize.
Mm-hmm. I think most people are generally kind and don't mean to be mean, and especially if they're married, especially if they have a good marriage. They're like, this is great for us. We wish, you know, and in some ways they're like, we want this for you. So it's not a mean thing. It's just like, wow, you know, come join the party or something. Mm-hmm. There's an element of that.
Yeah. It reminds me of that clip in the movie, He's Just Not That Into You, where those two women are sitting there and they talk about all the things that they've been dished, like from guys as far as like different rejections and stuff. And they said, you know, when the guy knows that, or you know, how you know that the guy's going to dump you, and he's like, you're too good for me. You know, you're just too, and she's like, really? If I'm too good for you, then how come, you know, and it's kind of the same thing of like, how come you're not married? Because you're so amazing. Well, how come you haven't asked me out? So, okay, that, Nathan, your comment segues into our next question, and I want to hear from the guys first on this. How do you deal with rejection?
I think it is hard, and I think as guys, we tend to not process it. We tend to just kind of put it inside and just, we do with our other guy friends, just kind of say, oh, well, you know, there's, you know, she must have some issue or something. And we kind of jokingly say that, but over time, if we don't deal with that, it can really kind of affect your heart, and you can be really closed off to people. And almost the thing that I think that we need to do is to kind of process, you know, it's okay, you know, that there are going to be times in life where things don't work, and that, you know, we kind of live our lives with our hands open and saying, Lord, you know, bring good things into my life. And, you know, and I think that, you know, I've seen a lot of times in my life where, you know, that I might have pursued a certain person, and it kind of fell apart, and there was some pain there. But over time, I kind of looked back and saw, you know, I think the Lord knew what He was doing there. And so, and you want to be careful with that, because you could turn that into, oh, she didn't deserve me, you know, anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that, you know, we always want to let the Lord veto the directions we run. You know, we are prone to look at the wrong things and to run after people for the wrong things and to pursue for the wrong reasons. And so, I regularly pray, Lord, if this isn't a good fit, or if this isn't going to work out, you know, break it off earlier than later, just to guard her heart and to guard my heart. You know, I'm not a big fan of like dating a long time to see if it'll work. I mean, I think I would much rather the Lord, you know, kind of show us early on if that's the case. So
mm-hmm. There's a couple different kinds of rejection. I think there's the short relationship rejection, and in those situations, you know, they haven't really gotten the opportunity to know you, so how can they reject you? You know, it's not like it's a deep core thing. It's just kind of a surface thing. So, you know, if they knew me, they'd love me. You know, it's just that kind of a deal. But it gets harder when you get deeper into a relationship and they do get to know you. But then there are other elements that are at work there as well. You know, the other person, their stuff, where they're coming from.
Yeah, that's a good point that Lee brings up, because when it's early on, to me, I don't process it, because it doesn't feel like rejection to me. It just felt like timing was off. they weren't really in a place where they wanted a relationship. Whereas later, a few months in or something, and suddenly you're rejected. I've been there too. And that stings a lot deeper because that is a rejection. And that's something that causes you to be introspective and say, what did I do to cause this? And then you start going off on rabbit trails on things that you could have done better to preserve it. And you really have to step back and say, you have to look back at it and say, this might have been unhealthy from the start. Maybe this was unhealthy from the start, and this is exactly what God wanted it, where it wanted it to go.
There's an element of what you're saying that, you know, do you need to be married or do you want to be married? Because if you need to be married, then that's a whole different ball game, and there's some stuff you need to look at. If you want to be married, then that's different. You know what I'm saying? That if you need to get married, then you're putting too much, way too much on the relationship, on the person. It's not fair to them. You know, and it's not gonna build a good foundation for a relationship.
Yeah, well, I think there's a difference, yeah, between getting to an end goal that doesn't have a face attached to it and just being obsessed with that, and then recognizing, okay, well, I really am called to marriage, so I need to move towards that as a goal. But you know, to make it about the person, I think that's huge.
I was in a relationship at one point, and I changed my Facebook status to say in a relationship, but it's complicated. And there's two girls that defriended me. And it made me mad because I was just like, wait a minute, why is it? The only thing that changed was the status, and they're no longer my friend. It's like they wanted something from me, and when they couldn't get it, then there was no longer a relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, that's baloney, you know?
They just wanted you to uncomplicate it, apparently.
Yeah, so. I was, yeah. Yeah.
That's, it sounds like it was just above their heads.
Because I wasn't their option for the knight in shining armor, then all of a sudden I wasn't an option at all.
Okay. I think for women, it's much more difficult to, even on these short-term relationships, just get over something or cast it off quickly. I think women tend to take things extremely personally. And of course, you know, after the first coffee date, we often are at risk of envisioning a future with the person. And that's really where we we tend to go and have some questionable behaviors, I think, out of that. But I think it's helpful. You know, I've kind of had... for women, it's weird because we're not really putting it out there and risking. So, but you could have someone that you're interested in, you feel like you're giving signals and just nothing happens, which also you can play off as the, well, they're obviously just a jerk or they're idiot, you know, an idiot, and they don't know how great it's I true. Am and stuff. So we'll often tell ourselves stuff like that. And women are very good at helping other women, not look at the facts and not look at reality by saying, well, you're so amazing, I can't even believe why he wouldn't want to go out with you, when meanwhile you know that that person has very real things that they probably could address, and you should be much more honest with them about it, you know. But we want to just make ladies feel good. And so I think that's kind of where our error comes into play. But I will speak briefly to the being rejected at a deeper level, having dated someone who actually proposed and didn't work out and stuff. And I don't think there's anything wrong with doing some counseling after that. So, I mean, there are very real, like, wounds that, you know, things can bring up, relationships or whatever. And don't be afraid to, whether it's a pastor or a counselor at your church or a professional counselor, to go and just work out some stuff. Because, you know, you can easily say, well, obviously I have all these things wrong with me that made me unworthy of love, and, you know, it can just drive to a lot of deeper things. And so you definitely need time and healing for that kind of stuff, and getting objective feedback in there, I think, could be helpful as well. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an important point, Lisa. I mean I have several close guy friends in my life that, you know, probably once a month I kind of say, you know, what are the things that you see that I need to be working on? And I push them to be honest. And sometimes, I mean, that's not fun to hear, but I do think that, you know, we can be prone to see our own highlight reel and not the things that, you know, might be scaring people away. You know, I mean, all of us have been around people who, you know, we kind of all know, like, you kind of in your mind think, like, oh my gosh, like, train wreck, you know. And, you know, I mean, I'm thinking of guys, none of you girls, but, you know, you think of the guys, and you're like, oh man, like, he's got some major issues. But a lot of times he wouldn't agree if you pointed it out and said, you know, you need to work on this. A lot of times, especially as guys, we don't see it. Mm-hmm. And so that's been kind of a strategy thing, to have guy friends that I'm like, okay, what are the things that you see in my personality, my character, the way I come across? You know, please feel free to call me on those things. And, you know, I don't look forward to those conversations, but I can't work on them if I don't know. So
Yeah, I think that speaks so much to Jesus's character too, because he always led with grace and he followed with truth. So when you ask your friends about their opinions on something, they always start with grace. You know, they open it up in a friendly way because they do care about you, but they also need to come to you with truth. And I'm reminded of the Samaritan woman at the well. Jesus came to her, was very gracious toward her, and then he called her out that she wasn't married, living with someone, had five husbands before that. So I think that's something we as friends need to do too, is lead with grace, keep people that are close to us, let them know we love them, but also be very truthful and honest, heartfelt with them when they ask for our advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I'd like to just throw out there as a general principle, I think I've said this on the blog before too, but guys that write to us and say, I have asked 10 women or 15 women out this month and every one of them has turned me down. If that is the case, I would say that it may be you. that's a high statistic. And so really that's where I would say go to a brother in Christ that you trust or an older guy in your church or whatever and just say, hey, you know, what would be your assessment of why this is the case? Mm-hmm. Ladies, same thing. If you are in a sphere of a good number of single men, they are asking other people out and they are not asking you out for like a period of 6 months, go and go and talk to someone and say, what is it about me? Am I standoffish? Am I coming across as bitter? Am I nitpicky? Am I, you know, just fading into the woodwork too much? I think that people can provide some good feedback on that for us. So that's good. Mm. All right. How do you maintain hope for marriage after years and years of disappointments?
One of the things I don't do is watch sappy movies because that just gets really depressing. I mean, you watch those movies and everything clicks together and you think about your life and you're like, wow, that is about as far from my experience as possible. And I still can watch those and not, you know, be depressed. But I think that we base our hope in what God's doing in our life, and we recognize that, you know, one of the things that I think it's easy to do is to feel like, you know, we're behind, or that, you know, God has forgotten about us, or he's not hearing our prayers, or there's some disconnect there. And I think that you know, when we look at the scripture, God uses difficult times to make us more like Christ. You know, of all of us around the table, God's goal for us is more that we would look like Jesus tomorrow than that we would, you know, be happy in a relationship. You know, and I think that he does want us to be happy, but mostly he wants us to be happy in him, and he wants us to grow in him. And so we need to recognize that, you know, marriage is a good gift. You know, I actually just did a buddy's wedding this weekend, and I talked about, you know, that passage in Genesis where God had provided everything Adam needed up into the point where he made Eve, and then he provided again. He recognized it's not good for Adam to be alone, and he made Eve. Adam didn't have to bring it up. He made him. And so God is a provider, and marriage is part of his providence. And so we have to recognize that he's, you know, he's intimately aware of our lives. He knows our heart's cry, and that, you know, he's looking for opportunities to provide. And so I kind of rest my hope in that, you know, Lord, you know. And another thing that I do is I regularly pray that, Lord, if I can be more effective for your kingdom single, then let it be. And that's a tough prayer. You know, that is a prayer that I wrestle to pray because I want to get married. But I recognize that it's more important for my life long term that I'm effective for his kingdom, that I'm using the gifts that he's given me as adequately as I possibly can. And I think if I chase those gifts and chase the opportunities that he's giving, then when I need a helpmate to do that even better, he's going to bring that person to my life. And so the focus isn't on the helpmate. The focus is on the task. And the more, like, when you get to a point where you're biting off so much where it's like, man, you really need somebody to be cooking your meals because you're so busy serving me, then, you know, it'll be, that's my strategy. I don't know if it's theologically sound, but.
So how do you reconcile that with understanding, okay, as I'm serving God, he'll let me know when I'm supposed to take on a helpmate, with the idea that men are called to step out and pursue mm-hmm. marriage? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. That is something that we have to weigh because we are the initiators, and so we are kind of if we want to get married, then we need to be proactive. But I think that also, I mean, the Lord is very good at bringing people into our lives. I mean, I've seen it in so many of my friends that have gotten married. I mean, it's almost like they kind of smacked both of them across the head and said, "Hey, guess what? You guys are going to be married." And so, and I'm not saying we have to wait for that, But I think that as a single man, if I don't feel like I'm called to singleness, I should be pursuing marriage in some way. That, you know, that there isn't, and this is kind of one of my pet peeves when I talk to young men, is that, you know, they kind of feel like, oh, well, I'm in a time of just waiting, like for the next 3 or 4 years. And these are men that are out of college and are just kind of getting their careers together and just feel like I'm just in a pause mode. I'm not looking. I'm not kind of looking around to see who the Lord's bringing to my life. I'm just kind of in neutral. And I just feel like unless you feel like God has called you specifically to that you should be in drive, like you should be looking, you should be pursuing, you should be preparing. And so that's just kind of, as I look at the scriptures, I see God often calls people to singleness, you know, and gives them the gift of singleness. And Paul says, you know, I wish everybody was single because of how much they could achieve for the kingdom. But he also said, if you burn with a desire, you know, for sex or for a relationship, you know, then get married. You know, that's not a sin. And so kind of, I think that, you know, Paul is interesting on this topic because he was living the single life and he obviously had that gift and saw that, man, I could do so much more as a single man than I could if I was to be married. Mm-hmm. And that was probably part of the culture and the time.
Yeah.
But I think that's the question to ask there, Lisa, is to say, Lord, I'm going to chase the things that you have me to do. And when I can be more effective for your kingdom married, then bring that woman into my life.
Yeah. So much of feeling content has to do with your perspective. So your perspective can really build you up or it can drown you. For instance, when you're single and you go out in public and you're lonely and bitter about it, then all you notice are the couples. But if you're part of that couple and you go out in public, you don't sit around and go, look at all the single people around here, because that's not where your mindset is. So you have to be able to be content with where you are and where God has you at that time. And I think the rest of it comes a lot easier. I know for me, once I shifted over from being bitter about it to understanding there were reasons why I was single and I could still do lots of great things, that was a big shift for me in my perspective. That was huge.
What should I do in the meantime if I feel called to be a homemaker and mother? I've never been career-oriented, and those are the only jobs I've ever aspired to. I just turned 30, and I'm not sure how to proceed in the corporate world with no real desire to be here.
Well, that question reminds me of just some advice that my mom gave me about do the next thing. Of that might be your desire and hope down the road, but where am I right now, and do the next thing. For me, there came a point where I was able to buy a house, and being there now, I can be somewhat of a homemaker of decorating and nesting and having that kind of outlet. With my job, I wasn't looking for a job when Boundless came along, but it came there and it was do the next thing of go ahead and apply and then do the interview. And it's just taking that one step at a time and not just, I guess, being depressed and that it's not what you had pictured, but trusting that God has that under control and being responsible with what he's given you now.
That's good. Okay. What advice would you give a single male wanting marriage but afraid of becoming a statistic of divorce?
It's not worth rushing it. I mean, I know people who are desperate and got married and have ended marriage miserably, are still miserable. It's just not worth getting into or rushing.
Yeah, I agree. I would tell that young person to be careful, but at the same time, you know, to continue to just use wisdom, to ask the Lord for wisdom. I think that most of us, I think what the person, you know, who's thinking in that line thinks that, what if I marry the wrong person and that person causes a divorce? And we often don't think about, you know, what if I'm not ready? And so I think, yeah, just asking, the James says, you know, ask the Lord for wisdom and he'll give it. And I think that, you know, more and more, it is easy to forget what the Lord's purpose is in marriage. As we have, you know, those of us who have, you know, friends and family members who have gone through divorce, I think that it is easy for us to think, I hope that never happens to me, or what if that happened to me, and to recognize that that is definitely something you want to watch for in the character of the person that you're pursuing, in as far as, you know, assessing that, like, is this a person that is committed? How do they handle when I hurt them? You know, I think that's a huge thing to watch when you're dating and engagement is, when you hurt them, does it take them a day to get over it? Or does it take them a couple minutes? Like, are they able to offer you grace quickly? because that's the type of person who, you know, that's a good way to divorce-proof a marriage, is to just be grace-filled yourself and to find somebody who's grace-filled. And if you find somebody who, you know, holds grudges and, you know, can't let things go, and I'm talking about little things. I mean, I know there are big deal breakers that, you know, that you should end things over. But a pastor friend of mine said, you know, everybody looks like the big buzz is on compatibility and looking at all these personality traits and compatibility. And he says the thing you should be looking for is somebody who's full of grace, who treats their friends with grace, who treats their family with grace, who can absorb being hurt, and it doesn't rock the whole relationship. So and I think that's a capacity that I try to grow in. And
mm-hmm. So. Good. Okay. Yeah, I think a little plug for next week's show as well. We're going to talk about breaking the cycle of divorce with Dr. John Trent. So make sure you check that out as well. He had some really good things to say to us when we taped that one. So, all right, what does the dating scene look like at your age? I know God isn't bound by odds, but I imagine that the number of singles decreases until a certain age, at which point it begins to increase again to death and divorce. I'm holding out hope that the nursing home dating scene is going to be hopping.
Can't you picture that?
Yeah, exactly.
I'd say quickly, at 42, that it seems like everything speeds up. Like you go out with a person, all of a sudden one date means eight dates. It's like you've dated eight times, you know, and then there's so much more expectation the older you get that maybe this is the one, and then it just speeds so fast, and you just got to say, whoa, wait a minute. Just, you know, got to slow down things.
Suddenly dating's like dog years.
Yeah, exactly. Seriously.
Yeah.
Nice. What about you guys, younger guys? What's it look like out there?
It's hard to say because it's so much of depending on who I'm going to date depends on the situation. Is she alone? Does she look approachable? And there's very few scenarios where I feel like that's really an open option. And you go through so many things in your head where you're like, okay, well, there's a girl and she's in the grocery store. She's by herself, doesn't have a ring on, check. You know, you go through this checklist and then you think, but she's not really smiling. She's not really, doesn't look that pleasant, hasn't smiled at me. So my glimpses of the dating scene really have to do with very small public areas, because once you get out of college, it really shrinks. It really shrinks a lot. You have the workplace, you have your church, and then a lot of times in church, it's a lot of couples. And again, that goes back to perspective too, because you see couples and you think, oh, well, my hopes are lost here because everybody here is already together. So I don't have the best idea of the 20-something dating culture, because it changes even in the 20s. Once you hit 25 on versus 20 to 25, it's completely different, and I just feel like it drops off. So it's I don't feel very well versed at this age at 28 to handle it. I really don't.
Yeah, I think, I mean, one of the things that I try to do is to keep things really light early on, you know, kind of to Lee's point. It is easy, you know, when you have two people who are, you know, both interested in getting married soon, it is easy to kind of like speed things up or escalate things or to let the relationship move faster than it really should. And so I try to intentionally like lead in that way and say, you know, here's how I envision a relationship moving. And those beginning stages, to do things that are really fun and to avoid, you know, sitting and talking for like five straight hours, you know, about, you know, deep things. I mean, even though I enjoy doing that, I think that is part of, you know, taking it slow. Is a lot of people don't think like that. They're like, oh, I just want to, you know, become friends. And so I want to talk about, you know, deep things in my heart and all that kind of stuff. And I think we need to be careful to keep it light, you know, to do fun stuff where you just enjoy experiences together and kind of get to know each other slowly. Because when you have two people that are kind of excited about where things are going, it is really easy to just like become magnets and sometimes that works. You know, I have friends who have gotten married after, you know, months of dating and, you know, are doing really well. And so that is the way sometimes, but I think it's foolish for us to seek that out or to think that's going to be the way it happens for us necessarily.
Okay. All right. Well, we have to wrap up here for this week's show. We'll have to go ahead and do another session, another episode of this, so we can get to the rest of everyone's questions. And we will go ahead and do that. But I want to thank you all for being part of this today, for weighing in. Thank you so much, everyone. And thank you, everyone out there, for submitting your questions. Like I said, there are more here on our sheet, so we will go ahead and address those on a future episode of The Boundless Show. So thanks, everyone.